Chapter 6, Major Screw-Ups. Fire Gilbert and get on with it!
One of the key challenges in adulthood is learning how to recover when things go sideways. When I interviewed Silicon Valley CEO and entrepreneur Steve Blank, he described a story, a situation that turned his entire life around. He got fired and humiliated in front of the whole company and told by the CEO, "Get the hell out of my company."
I must have been in my late 20s, maybe early 30s. We were just doing a new startup supercomputer company. We hired probably the first 5 or 10 engineers, and we were having a system planning meeting, meaning we were trying to figure out the specifications of the product. I was the VP of marketing. CEO was running the meeting, and we were talking about some exotic technology feature. And I was listening to the conversation, and there were, you know, engineers and scientists really jumping in. These people had all been in this industry, and they like knew what they wanted. And I was just sitting there thinking, I'm VP of marketing. I haven't heard the sound of my own voice in a while. I was missing it. I should probably pipe up. And so I said, well, I think we need, and then went on and said what I thought we needed. And the CEO stopped the meeting. I mean, it was just silence. And he looked at me and leaned over and said, "Say that again." Now, nowadays, I would recognize that's a sign that this isn't going to go well, but my ego was high and my emotional intelligence was probably in negative numbers at the time, so I thought, well, I must have thought I was a genius. I should just continue to expound on how brilliant I am. And so I went on for another 5 minutes, and he just looked at me, just like this. And people who knew him in the room said, you know, we were back in our chairs up against the wall because we knew what came next. And I was finally finished. And he said, "Are you done?" I said, "Why, yes." He put his face next to mine, just like you see in the Marine Corps with drill instructor, and started screaming at me, "You're an embarrassment to the profession of marketing. You don't know a damn thing what you're talking about. This room is full of people who've had 20 years of experience in talking to customers and understanding their needs. You don't have a clue about what these customers need, and therefore, you're just wasting our time. Get the hell out of the building, get the hell out of my company." And people who I'm still friends with today said, my face went completely white, and I still remember I felt this tall that I could walk out from underneath the closed door on the crack. And I thought I had just not only been fired, I'd been fired publicly and humiliated. And as I'm walking out the door, he says, "And take the damn VP of sales with you and don't come back until you really understand who our customers are." And he was smiling. Now, after 30 years, I have never forgotten the fact that when a marketeer opens their mouth, no one wants to hear their opinion. What they ought to be talking about were facts from customers. Now, that ended up to not only change my life, but change my entire career, and now that I've been teaching for a decade, has probably changed tens of thousands of people's lives, because it's the basis of something I teach called customer development. Now, the message was delivered by a 2x4 in a way that, if done today, would probably be the basis of a lawsuit. But I have to tell you, this was one of many of those conversations. And at that time in my career, was probably the only way it could have affected my behavior.
Steve went on to write a best-selling business book about what he learned, called The 4 Steps to the Epiphany. He now teaches about that at several business schools, including Berkeley and Stanford. The humiliation resulted in reshaping his future and impacting the entire profession of marketing. Fire Gilbert. The COO bellowed from the back of the room, "Fire Gilbert and get on with it!" My client wilted. After criticism from senior management for not getting to the point, he told them plaintively, "Well, the speech coach you sent me to, Gilbert, told me to use stories." "Well, fire Gilbert and get on with it!" This was a terrible day for my client and for me. Like what happened to Steve Blank, this humiliating moment turned out to be a major, life-changing turning point for our business. I talked to the COO the following week. What went wrong with Bob's presentation? Why did it go so badly? He said, look, we don't have time for stories. He got into this rambling story. We needed him to get to the point. I said, well, you see, stories give you long-term retention. Frustrated, the COO said something that changed our business forever. Holding back some anger, he said, we don't care about retention. We have to get to the point, make a decision, and move on. Like in the cartoons, a little light bulb went off on top of my head. I began to realize that when we're speaking to senior-level people at the C-level, the rules are altogether different. It's not our meeting. It's their meeting. And they have big time pressures. After that happened in 2001, I started interviewing CEOs in Silicon Valley about what will make people successful presenting to the top level. These interviews resulted in classes that helped lower-level people learn the secrets of C-level presentations. It has become half of Power Speaking's business. Tens of thousands of business people's lives have been changed by these classes. In addition, also like Steve Blank, I wrote a book about what we learned in the process. My book, Speaking Up, Surviving Executive Presentations, is listed as a business bestseller with sales of over 40,000 worldwide. This is another example of how a real screw-up resulted in a very positive business outcome. Carmel Highlands Inn. I was invited to speak to a small company's offsite at the beautiful Carmel Highlands Inn. My presentation was called Power of the Dream. It was to be given after dinner as a kind of motivational speech. The last thing this group needed was a rah-rah pitch. I learned a hard lesson that night. The company was having tough times, and everyone was under a great deal of stress. When I got there about 5 o'clock to meet everyone and get ready for my talk, they'd already been at a cocktail party for 2 hours. With dinner, they enjoyed 4 different kinds of wine. By the time I got on, everyone was completely smashed. Even Billy Crystal couldn't have handled that crowd. My first mistake was opening with my motivational quote from a Supreme Court Justice, Oliver Wendell Holmes. Alas for those who never sing, but die with their music still in them. One guy in the back of the room, a ringleader, threw his napkin up in the air, slid down in his chair, and yelled, oh my God, spare me! It went downhill from there. The last thing in the world they needed or wanted was an after-dinner speaker. I didn't know how to get out of it. I should have just cut it to 5 minutes and gotten the hell out of there. But I didn't. Afterwards, I went through the evaluations, and one stuck out. In fact, it's the most memorable evaluation I've had in my entire life as a speaker. It said simply, did we have a speaker? What a goddamn miserable evening that was. My major screw-up that night was not having the guts to end the talk early and go home. Wrong topic, wrong audience, wrong speaker. What I learned from all of this was, as the song The Gambler says, you gotta know when to hold 'em and know when to fold 'em. Sometimes you just gotta know when to fold 'em. To hell with the speaker's fee. Ginger Graham. I asked CEO Ginger Graham what mistakes she'd made on her climb up the corporate ladder. She described a real doozy that she thought would get her fired.
Well, I've made plenty of mistakes, some of them incredibly large. I was working on a transaction for Eli Lilly and Company at one point. We were selling a company that Lilly owned, and I was the primary person interfacing with the attorneys and the bankers and the negotiating table, and there was an issue, and I knew there was an issue. I didn't understand it, but I knew it. My intuition, my guts told me something was wrong, and I spent a long time trying to figure it out, asking a lot of people, but everyone kept saying to me, no, no, it's not a problem, and so I went against my own guts, and I said, okay, fine, and as we moved toward the close of that transaction, we discovered a $50 million mistake. And it was the issue that I should not have let go. But I gave in. It was easier. Everybody else said it was okay, but I knew something was wrong. And thankfully, I didn't get fired. I thought I would. But the feedback I got from the executive when I told them the issue and that I had known there was one, but I didn't fix it. And I thought he would fire me. And what he said to me was, I have just paid for the most expensive training you will ever get. It would not be a good time to fire you. It was a great lesson for me because I realized that mistakes happen. Thankfully, we were able to recover that mistake. But people do make mistakes. It's the way they grow, the way they learn, the way they learn to take risk and make judgments. And you can't rob an organization of mistakes because that's a great investment for the future. What you have to do is hopefully manage how those can be mitigated from very large ones and then recovered if there are mistakes, but not lose the talent in the process. He was one of the great role models in my entire career and actually has spanned. We still have relationship my entire career from age 22 to now.
What was his name?
His name was Vaughn Bryson.
Where did he work?
He was the CEO eventually of Eli Lilly and Company.
What I like about this story is the reaction her boss had and that she remains friends with him even today. The pilot. As a very senior trainer in the art of public speaking with decades of experience, I was confident in my teaching techniques. But one day, I learned a hard lesson about respecting students' boundaries. The female student, I'll call her Susan, had a lofty management position in a Silicon Valley company. Yet she seemed quite timid in front of the class. She had trouble gesturing in a way that looked confident. Now, this problem is not at all uncommon. A nervous speaker uses either no gestures or restricted, fidgety-looking gestures held close in tight to the body as if they're protecting something. So I urged Susan to open up and experiment with larger, more assertive, confident-looking gestures. This style technique enhances credibility. But she just couldn't do it. Using a training technique that always works magic, I kept the camera running in the back of the room. I walked up to her in the middle of her talk. I wanted her to feel what it's like to use more expansive gestures. As I've always done in similar situations, I stood in front of her and reached to her left arm to move it away from her body. As soon as I grabbed hold of her arm, though, at that point I got an awkward, embarrassing realization. Her arm was not real. It was a prosthetic arm that looked very natural, though made out of plastic. Our eyes met. I looked sheepish and ashamed. She looked calm and forgiving. I apologized softly and made a verbal suggestion. The class didn't notice what had happened. At the next break, we talked, and I told her how sorry I was. Graciously, she told me that things like this happen all the time and it didn't bother her. She went on to explain that she was a pilot and several years ago had an accident where a spinning prop chopped off her left arm. Big learning for this experienced trainer. I never again touched anyone in class without asking their permission. Hard lesson. The Hewlett-Packard Speaker. The company I founded in 1985, Power Speaking, works with small and large firms in Silicon Valley. We teach presentation skills to employees at all levels. One day, we were working at Hewlett-Packard. I was coaching a woman who seemed unusually jittery and unsure of herself. During her first talk in the morning in front of the entire class, I made several suggestions to help build her confidence. I guess I made one suggestion too many. I saw her bottom lip begin to quiver. I thought, oh, Jesus, this is not going well. I tried to get her back on track, but to no avail. Suddenly, she grabbed her things off the desk and bolted for the door. We never saw her again. I thought, oh, God, this is terrible. The next week, I called her at her office at Hewlett-Packard. I explained that I was really sorry what had happened. She said, well, it's not your fault. I'm going through a divorce. I have a sick kid at home, and I hadn't gotten much sleep the night before. I invited her to take one of our public workshops at our studio at no charge, you know, to get back on the horse. 2 weeks later, she came to our workshop and took the course again. For her first speech, she began to fall apart right away. But this time I was ready for what might happen. I kept the video running at the back of the class and walked right up to her and stood where I just got several feet from her. And I said, "Okay, Jean, take a deep breath now and talk only to me. This is just the two of us. This is private." She started giving me her presentation. And as she did, I took a step back. And then I took another step back and I said, "A little louder, a little louder." Pretty soon I was about 10 feet away from her and she was speaking louder and louder. And a moment later, she was speaking to the entire class. That seemed to give her the breakthrough that she needed. She finished the class in fine form. She had serious self-esteem and self-confidence issues. It was something that she needed to overcome in order to be successful in her job. And by doing that little intervention, I was able to get her back on the horse. I was very pleased to hear years later that she'd become president of her professional association and gave speeches around the country. Clearly, this was a major screw-up that had a very happy ending. Fizz water. It was a hot summer day in Palo Alto. I was one of 10 speakers who were previewing our best material in front of association meeting executives who hire speakers. I arrived a few minutes late. I grabbed a bottle of water from the side table, not realizing it was sparkling water. I sat down and unscrewed the cap, and the water erupted like a geyser all over my pants. I hit the stage with wet pants.
This was years ago when I was still trying to get, you know, speaking gigs, and there was three or four, a little panel of meeting planners. And I came a little bit late, and over in the corner, it was a hot day, and over in the corner they had water. So I reached over and I grabbed Crystal Geyser, and I sat down, took my seat. I was up next. But I didn't realize the Crystal Geyser that I had was a sparkling water. You're ahead of me here, aren't you? So I opened it up and it goes, you know, I said, "Oh, this is a creative opportunity." So I was on next. My opening line: people often ask me if I get nervous before a talk.
So, as you can see from these stories, sometimes when things go badly, it can lead to a better outcome in the future, like with Steve Blank's business and with our business with Power Speaking. Sometimes, though, we just have to grin and bear it. Another issue we often deal with in adulthood is fear. Sometimes it comes with the jobs we do. Other times, it's cast upon us in emergency situations. Some people like the adrenaline, others not so much. In this next chapter, you'll hear some pretty scary stories. Fasten your seatbelt.